This episode is sponsored by Tin Can Timepieces. Looking for a watch that's built for anything life throws at you? Let me introduce you to Tin Can Timepieces. This is more than just a watch. It's a commitment to quality and purpose. Tin Can Timepieces is proudly based out of Georgia and is owned and operated by an active-duty U.S. Navy submariner. That's right, a company built on discipline and precision. Every watch they create is handcrafted and features reliable automatic movements, ensuring you get a premium quality feel with every tick. Whether you need a rugged diver or a classic dress watch, Tin Can offers an assortment of styles for every mission. Tin Can Timepieces. Hand-built for purpose, built for the depths. Dive deeper and check out their collection today at tincantime.com. All right, good morning, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Pod Staff. With me today, I have Mr. Scotty Blankenship. Scotty is he's a watchmaker and a U.S. Navy active duty submariner. So without further ado, you know, Scotty, just give us a little bit about your background, about kind of the origin story of Tin Can Timepieces. As a lot of you hear in the beginning of my videos, new brand partnership with Tin Can Timepieces is advertised before and after every single video. So this is the man behind the entire operation. So Scotty, I'll let you take it away.
Hey, I'm Scotty. I'm a first-class petty officer. I am stationed down here in Kings Bay, Georgia. I live just a little north of Kings Bay, and I run our watch operation out of my garage. So just until about a month ago, I was stationed on a submarine out of Kings Bay, and now I'm on what's called a shore duty, which is basically an office job until I get out of the Navy, which gives me about 3 years till I get out of the Navy. So, yeah, started this watch company. Basically, you know, like all good companies start in the garage, right? So,
absolutely. You told me an interesting thing about just kind of the origin of even getting it started in your garage, where wearing a watch was only one of the only ways to stand out in a lineup. So, give us that light bulb moment, like that aha moment of, I think I'm going to go into this watch business.
Yeah, so it's actually a combination of a few things. So the Navy about 4 years ago had significantly reduced their standards when it comes to watches. It used to be very strict, like, hey, you have to have a black watch, or hey, you have to have a, you know, stainless steel watch, or if you're an officer, you're or a chief, you're allowed to have a gold watch, things like that. And the Navy kind of reversed back on that and was kind of saying, you know, hey, it doesn't really matter, just do your job, you know what I'm saying? So so kind of opened up the horizon for the amount of watches that I was able to wear. And then, you know, going to work every day, everyone's got the same boots on, everyone's got the same hat, same everything, you know what I'm saying? So the only way that you could stand out was putting a different watch on. Yeah, so I started collecting watches and kind of doing my own thing there for a long time, and decided, you know, I was really good at finding the good deals and stuff like that, so I decided to start buying and selling. So that got me a lot of background into like some of the bigger brands and stuff like that.
So and how long were you a collector before you became a creator?
Probably about 2 or 3 years. So not anything crazy. So I just, you know, would catch a watch every now and then and buy it and add it to the collection. And then somebody would offer me too much money for it and I'd let them have it, you know? So
yeah, yeah. As a collector, I think a lot of people are watch collectors, but they're not, you know, maybe they're interested in how watches are made, but they're not going to go start a watch business. So like, what was that that collector reselling mentality like, and how were you able to find some of those good deals?
Yeah, so I mean, just kind of knowing what things are worth, knowing what quality is, I guess. So knowing like you know, some of the Swiss brands and things like that, and like knowing the quality of the watch, knowing like, hey, you know, this watch in 10 years is still going to be worth this, or I know it's going to be worth, you know, this much more because of how, you know, robust it is, right? Mm-hmm. So like a lot of your automatic watches where, you know, it's easier to get them, or it's better to get them serviced than it would be to like just replace a movement, and some of like your older like Omega quartz movements, stuff like that, like those aren't worth near as much. So yeah, just finding good deals. I mean, I'm telling you, anywhere, you know, guys selling their grandpa's stuff, or, you know, people selling stuff on eBay, or, you know, just anything, buying a whole bunch of watches at once and finding the ones in there that, you know, were worth something, and then turn around and selling them.
What was that turnaround time on average on like whenever you get a watch? Like, let's just say you didn't buy 10 of them, you bought a watch, maybe you bought an Omega or a Tag or something like that for a good price, how quickly were you able to usually flip those watches for a profit?
Not at all. Not quick at all. So I would have them for months. So I'd be sitting on a few thousand dollars just sitting in my watch box, just trying to find a buyer. You know what I'm saying? So a lot of the guys I was trying to sell to were other Navy guys, stuff like that. So and a lot of those guys don't want to spend $2,000 or $3,000 on a watch to wear it down on a submarine. So yeah, so that's one of the things that kind of got me like, okay, maybe these guys want a different kind of watch. And then I was also the president of what's called our rec committee, which is like Navy guys would know, like a MWR. But it's basically like a morale things, like so the guys on the boats that sell the hats and the patches and stuff like that, and they throw the big parties for the boats, stuff like that. That's what I was president of on my submarine, and we had reached out because I was a watch guy. I had reached out to a few companies, not to name any specifics, some big ones that you all know, and I was like, hey, you know, not expensive ones, but I was like, hey, you know, we want to create a watch for our submarine, you know what I'm saying? Like, want to put maybe the Rhode Island crest, which was the ship I was on, the Rhode Island, put the crest or the name of the boat or something like that on the dial, and then, like, put something on the case back just to make it, you know, a Rhode Island watch. And we want to sell them, you know, try to make money off of them. And basically I got the runaround by a few of those big companies over and over again. It would just end up me, you know, sending emails back and forth and just endless nothing. And then by the time I finally got a quote, they didn't want to do any that were less than like 100 minimum order quantity. And
so you were trying to get your logo on their, like a bulk order of their watches.
Yeah. The ship's logo.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was trying to get the ship's logo on a bulk order of like their watches. They wanted me to order 100 and I couldn't guarantee that we were going to be able to sell 100. And they wanted an astronomical amount for them. Like, we're talking like $650 just for a watch. And I was like, I don't think these guys are going to want a $650 watch to wear down on a submarine. So I was like, why is this so hard to get this done? So that's kind of when I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it myself. So I did. And the first watch I made was for my submarine, and I made about 20 of them and sold them all within a few days. So
yeah,
that's where the magic started. So,
and I mean, this may be self-explanatory for some people listening, but tell us about the Tin Can name.
Yeah, so me and my wife tried to come up with a name for my business for probably a few weeks, just going back and forth, you know, sending each other random text messages throughout the day with different names. And I wanted something that was kind of would hint towards submarines or naval theme or something like that, because that's kind of how we started. And couldn't come up with anything. We tried, you know, all the big naval terms, you know what I'm saying? So, like, all the fancy Navy were scuttlebutt or, you know, just all kind of different stuff, you know what I'm saying? Tried a bunch of different stuff.
I don't know if that would have sold as well.
I don't think so. And then I can't remember if it was my idea or her idea. And then one of us was like, Tin Can. You know, like, I hear people all the time say, you know, when I tell them I'm on submarines, they say, I don't see how you can go underwater in that tin can. And so that's kind of where we started. So, tin can, and obviously timepieces. And then as far as the logo, we wanted something same that would kind of allude to submarines or naval. And then we came up with that.
By the way,
we came up with that animated submarine, very animated submarine. Obviously it has porthole windows and, you know, a little snorkel and stuff like that. And, that's not entirely accurate, but, so we came up with that, little logo, and it seems to be that everyone loves the logo. And the name seems to stick pretty well too. So
yeah, tincantime.com is a, you know, that's a pretty catchy website to tell people. Tincantime.com.
Yeah, yeah. And people, once they realize like, oh, tin can, like, oh, okay, I get it. And it kind of is a little bit of a play on words as to our watches as well, because they're obviously not tin cans, you know what I'm saying? But you can treat them like one.
We had talked about this whenever we were talking about doing a brand partnership, and I was like, you know, to me, without being a Navy guy, when I saw Tin Can Time, I'm thinking, man, these watches are probably just built very durably and made to withstand anything like a tin can could. And yeah, when I brought that up to you, you had kind of been like, well, yeah, I mean, they're made to be, you know, rough with as well. So
yeah, so I mean, Our most popular model is the SS1, and it, sapphire crystal, stainless steel case, and it's priced less than $300. So you do beat it up, you're not gonna feel that bad, right? So, it's got ceramic bezel. It's got all the things that you would want out of a more durable watch, but it's cheap. You know what I'm saying? So it's not a, $3,000 watch, whereas some of these other brands with the exact same features would be $1,500, $2,000. So.
And I have a tag that I told you about, and I have my watch boxes, and then I have my wooden watch stand for my daily watch. As soon as I got that Swiss SS1 in, I put the tag in the watch box, and then put the SS1 as my daily watch, just 'cause it's a little bit lighter. It's very durable. It feels like it's got a metal band, and I like the automatic movement, and my tag is a quartz, and so I don't have to be wearing it every day for it to for the time to stay correct. So I really like that SS1, and then love this one that you just sent me. This is the Quartermaster in teal. So if you want to tell us about this watch as well versus the SS1.
So the Quartermaster is our most complicated watch. So it's got, and you can see on the website, it's got a day, date, month, year. It's got, everything. So it's very complicated. It's our only watch. It is automatic, or it's our only watch that uses a not a Seiko movement or not a Swiss movement at the moment. So that watch actually uses a Seagull movement, which I was a little skeptical of at first. And then we started working with them, and I usually have a higher amplitude, which is kind of like how efficient the watch is running, with those Seagull movements that I'm having with some of my Seiko movements. So far we've had no issues with the Seagull movements, especially like that one, specifically. So yeah, the Seagull movement and that Quartermaster. So the Quartermaster is larger. It comes in, I think it's 42 millimeters. It's got all four corners as a complication. So
Well, and I don't even have massive wrists, and this thing fits perfectly right on my wrist.
it comes in a rose gold and also that stainless steel, and then we throw just a leather strap on it. So the lug to lug is 21 millimeter. If I could go back, I'd do it as a 20 millimeter, but 20 millimeter at the time didn't look right. So 21 millimeter is the lug width we went with on that one. But I still think it fits well. It's got the see-through case back and everything else. So it fits good and it looks good. So yeah, you can't beat it, honestly. It's the crystal on it is a double dome mineral crystal, so it's not a sapphire. Just because sapphire crystals are so expensive to get in a double dome, we wanted to keep that price less than that $300 mark. So
Yeah, I
which
do
we were able
notice
to
when I
do that
turn
one.
this to the side, it's got more of a kind of a domed look.
So it's considered a double dome on that one. And they're great watches. It's the case is kind of unique in the way we do it, because the movement comes out the top instead of out the bottom like most of our cases. So you kind of assemble the movement, the dial and everything, and then drop it in and then press the bezel onto the top of it. So it's a little harder to service if you were to service it. But to be honest, if you were to service that watch, it would cost you more than it would just to replace the entire watch. So which I think is awesome. You know what I'm saying? So I'm not saying they're disposable by no means. You know what I'm saying? If Seagull tomorrow decides to no longer make that movement, 10 years down the road, you want to service this thing, it's completely serviceable. So you could do that and not have to replace it. So.
The Seikos and the Swiss movements versus the Seagull movements, the Swiss ones and the Seiko ones are a little bit more reliable, but like what's the life on them versus, the Seagull?
The Seagull movements claim they have a 15-year life, no need to service or anything like that. I don't believe any of that every time I hear it. So I don't believe that with any watch company. You know what I'm saying? You wouldn't wear a Rolex for 15 years and never service it. At least I wouldn't. So you shouldn't do that with any automatic movement. But nowadays, with the way that these movements are made and the lubricants that they use, they're all synthetic lubricants, so they don't break down or harden up, which would cause you to need a service more often. So the really the only thing that would need you to have a service is if there was like a buildup of like basically what happens when you rub two pieces of metal together for a long time. You know what I'm saying? Just get like that black just junk in there, just like a buildup. Or if you were to have like get water in it, something like that for the Seagull movement, you'd want to get a little get some service done on it. So Seagull claims a 15 years. The NH35, which is what I use in most of my movements, most of my Seiko movements, They have a lifespan of about 5 to 7 years from what I've seen. But now I've seen people that have them that are 20 years old and they're still ticking just fine. You know, they never had it serviced, never had anything done to it. So,
think it's a lot about how you wear it too?
it is, yeah, definitely. So, you know, there's the belief behind like watch winders or not watch winders, things like that. So, you know, in my point of view, it's like, well, if a watch is running all the time, you know what I'm saying, it's things are going to wear out faster. Or if a watch isn't running all the time, you know, oh, maybe some of those lubricants dry up. Like if it's an older watch, sure. The synthetic lubricants we use in these watches nowadays, they're not going to dry up. So I don't keep any of my watches in a watch winder. But now with the Swiss movement, the Sellita SW200 movement, that is like top of the line movement, you know, probably good for about 10 years on that one. And it's got a higher beat rate, so it's a much more efficient watch. Still has about the same power reserve as the Seiko,
And
but
you said that movement is the movement that's in, like your Tudors and your entry-level
yeah.
Rolexes, right?
Yeah, so Sellita is basically the same thing as the ETA movement, which is, they're basically clones of the ETA movement, and they're just made literally right next door in Switzerland. They once all the patents ran out for ETA movements, and basically they said, "Hey, we're not selling to anyone anymore unless they're like a big manufacturer." Sellita said, "Okay, well we're gonna sell to all the little guys then." So they're the ones who sell to us. So ones that you find in like your Tags, Tudors, things like that, those are all gonna be your Swiss made. They'll either be your Sellita or your ETA movements. And yeah, it's the exact same movement. You know what I'm saying? So you pull out the case back off of a more expensive watch, and I can take the rotor off of my watch and take the rotor off of theirs and swap them. You know what I'm saying? So it all
Right.
just, all the parts fit their watch.
And
So,
they charge 10 times more than you
oh
do.
yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. They charge a whole lot more than I do. So, and you know, you can't call them and talk to the owner. You know what I'm saying? So,
Is any part of that watch just like way better than a tin can watch? Because from what we've discussed, it seems like it's really just the price point and it's really just the markup.
yeah, so they spend a lot of money on research, development, and things like that. They also spend a lot of money on low quantities. So when they make these watches, they may only make 500 or 600 of them, of each individual one. So they spend a lot of time designing new models and things like that just to sell only 500 or 600 of them. So that's kind of a downfall of that. So it does take them a lot more money to do that. They have a lot more people involved than I do, right? So they have to pay all those people. So they have to raise the price for their watches to do that. They've got big fancy factories and watchmakers and stuff like that that want to get paid lots of money. And yeah, so they have to pay all those guys. So they jack the price up on their watch. And then a good rule of thumb in like the jewelry business, which I don't follow, but a good rule of thumb in the jewelry business is if something costs $1,000, you mark it up 10 times and then you'll make your money, which is crazy to me because, I mean, you know, if their watches are costing $3,000, that means they may only cost $300 to make.
Until you told me that stat, I would have definitely thought that the markup in the jewelry business was going to be more like 10%, not
Ooh.
10x.
Yeah, it's the markup in jewelry business, except for things like hard gold, like, you know, stock silver, some stuff like that. Like they'll pay, you know, market price minus, you know, 3% or something like that. So they make less money off of you bringing a gold bar in there than they would say, "Hey, I need, you know, 10 gold rings made out of this gold bar." You know, so they're gonna take that cost and whatever it costs them to make it, and they're gonna multiply it times 10. And which is crazy. But
That is
they can
crazy.
do that because they have the fancy names and, you know, they have the marketing and all that stuff.
So tell me about, we talked a little bit about the like moving beyond the mods, which I, for those who don't know what the mod watches are, can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, so the mod watches are basically people that take like replica watch cases. So like the most popular one is like the Rolex Submariner. People will take like a replica watch case from places like AliExpress or eBay, things like that, and they'll throw an NH35 in it, and they'll throw a 28.5 millimeter dial in there that says Seiko on it. So it looks like you're wearing a Seiko, you know what I'm saying? But like Seiko never made that watch. So that's kind of like your Seiko mod. And there's some other companies that they kind of go after too, not just Rolex. They go after like APs. I've
Yeah, I've
seen
seen the
some.
AP ones, and that's absurd because, you know, an AP could cost you $100,000,
Oh, yeah.
whereas these are made to look like them. I've never seen one in person, so I don't know how good they look in person. But it is always funny because, like, I know Seiko is its own brand, but then people put a Seiko dial on there and then call it a Seiko watch. And I think that fools a lot of people. So people will pay. And you mentioned, like, some of the cheaper websites that that they get the mods from, like Alibaba or, you know, whatever it may be. Like, people will pay that money to get a Seiko watch, but how much does that watch probably cost? $50?
Maybe. Especially for the, because they're all coming from China, you know what I'm saying? So, especially, and nowadays you have to watch out for the Chinese NH35 movements, which are basically the Chinese ripped off Seiko and making their own NH35s. And they're not good at all. But, so you got to watch out for those. But, yeah, so those may cost those guys $50 to make tops. And, you know, the Chinese can go around, turn around and sell them for 70, $80 and make money, you know, same, same. Yeah. So it's kind of, and you think you're buying a Seiko, but you're actually buying this, you know, Chinese piece, and it's not, you're not going to be happy in the end, you know?
Yeah, I've seen them do, like, the Rolex Daytona Pandas in them, and, I mean, some of them kind of look cool from a distance.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's definitely cool. Now, there's I'm not saying that there's no place for mod watch cases or stuff like that. So the mod watch community being as big as it is has definitely saved me money. So it's like when I'm going and designing a watch, I can design a set of watch hands, and it may cost me X amount of dollars to design a set of watch hands. And I have to order a minimum quantity of like 300 sets, which would take me a little while to sell, would be 300 sets of watch hands. You know what I'm saying? Or I can find a company that already makes these watch hands for like the watch mod community. And I can talk to them like, hey, I'd like to get a set of these watches or these set of these hands. I want 100 sets, and I want, you know, XX, these things. You know, I want, you know, blue Swiss loom on them, you know, something like that. And these companies already have all the molds and stuff like that cut out for them, so they're, you know, they're able to sell me a smaller amount of quantity for a, you know, slightly more expensive price than it would be if I made my own. But I don't have to keep 300 sets of hands on hand, you know what I'm saying? So that helps me a little bit. So the mod watch community kind of helps in that regard. Dial blanks, stuff like that, it helps a whole lot. So
I think we discussed that, you know, you still have the capabilities to make some mod watches. You kind of gotten away from that and started to do your own designs. So what's been the, I guess, the buyer's perspective of once you kind of moved away from more of that mod watch?
Yeah, so when I was doing a lot of, at first I was only doing custom stuff, so like, you know, custom logos for people and stuff like that, and all I used was those mod watch cases. And then, you know, seeing on like, I'd be get an ad on Facebook for another mod watch company or something like that, and seeing that they were selling their watches for like $350 for the same watch that I was selling for like $250, you know, and I just felt like my product was no different than theirs, and I didn't like that. I like to stand out, so, you know, I changed my packaging up. I got away from the wood box that I was using before, and I went with this, like, Pelican-style case that I have now.
Yeah. Which I have multiple videos on my Instagram and my TikTok, so check out that unboxing video of mine. I will have more of those coming soon as well.
Awesome. Yeah, so got away from, you know, the more simple stuff. I tried to model after like some bigger brands that I had done some work with, things like that, that used like the Pelican style cases. I use, like, the packaging is wonderful. Like, I love my packaging. Try to, you know, upgrade our packaging, and then trying to find a direction to steer the entire company when we decided to get away from mod watches. So I still do like custom watches for people, and I use mod watch cases when I do these custom watches, or, you know, one of our own cases. So transitioning first, just started out, I said, you know, I need a dive watch and I need a chronograph. Mm-hmm. So the dive watch, which is our SS1, which is our most popular, went in, designed that, took some inspiration here, took some inspiration there, came together, found the perfect lug to lug, perfect size, and then kind of just ran with it. Found manufacturers that could manufacture the case, and then start cranking these things out. Got the case, liked the case. At that point, I already knew what dial would fit in it, so I started shopping for 31-millimeter dials, trying to find what I wanted. Decided with a like a Planet Ocean look, so like an Omega Planet Ocean look for the SS1. Mm-hmm. So I went with a dial, kind of like what they use. I went to Swiss SS1, it really looks like it. But the Planet Ocean look for the SS-1s, and then it just kind of took off from there. NH-35 is what I use for those, so that was super easy because I was already buying those from another company, and then I used a set of hands that a company had already been making.
Real quick about the SS1 for any of our listeners that are just hell-bent on having Swiss-made watches. I mean, the SS1 is still less, the Swiss SS1 is still less than $500 as a price point. So it's still very affordable.
Oh yeah. Yeah, like I don't think you're gonna find another company that makes a Swiss automatic watch with a Sellita movement. I don't know if there's any other Swiss automatic watches that are cheaper, but you won't find anyone that uses the Sellita or an ETA movement for less than $500. And ours are priced at $449. So yeah, we're very, very happy to have it where we're at. And yeah, the only reason we can do that is because I have basically no overhead. You know what I'm saying? There's a door over here. It walks into my kitchen. You know what I'm saying? So I'm in the garage, and I've got this set up, and I'm building on. Going to be a much larger garage because we've outgrown this garage. So building on and stuff like that. So we'll still be at home, and I'll still be trying to keep that overhead as low as possible. And like I said, I'm the only employee, so all the social media posts you see, and all the Facebook posts, and all the work being done, all the research, development, everything's me. So yeah,
That's
me and the
awesome.
wife, I should say.
Well, now I was going to ask. So let's just say you were down for 2 months or something like that. You were sick or, something like that. Would your wife be able to make the watches?
No, she doesn't make the watches. She knows how to, she does the shipping and stuff for me out here, especially on nights where it's like, "Hun, I got 15 watches we got to do tonight." She's like, "All right." And then, I'll just be over here cranking out watches, and she can, ship them. She knows how to package them and everything. So she ships them for me. She does the social media stuff for me sometimes. A lot of like the fundraisers and things like that we do, she'll help me with the designs.
Yeah, and I see that you've got the fundraiser behind you, that Carbon Series one.
Yeah, so this isn't a fundraiser. This is actually we are sponsoring a race team next year. And this is their design that we came up with. So this is a carbon fiber watch, and the dial colors are the colors of their race car. So
Wow,
those
that's
should be out by February 7th is when we're introducing those for the first race of 2026 at Road Atlanta. So
And anyone can buy them, and anyone in the public can buy them. Okay.
So we're taking reservations right now. We have a few left if someone wants them. But yeah, they're fully forged carbon fiber. The bracelet and all is forged carbon fiber. And then it uses the Seiko VK63 movement, so chronograph movement.
Now, if someone in my network or if someone that follows the Podstaff was to use the Podstaff 20 code for a reservation like that carbon watch behind you, will that still apply?
Yes, 100%.
Okay.
Yeah, so any of our discount codes work for any of our watches, any of our products. So the reservation as well. So if they
Okay.
were to reserve a watch, they'd get 20% off their reservation. They'd get a forged carbon fiber watch in the mail, and in February. So
Yeah, and I'm sure because I see it's, price point of around 650 full price, like what would that watch be if it was sold by another company? Because every single time I see a carbon watch, if it's the same watch as a one next to it that doesn't have carbon fiber on it, then like it's usually at least two or three times the price.
yeah, so the main company I think of when I think of carbon fiber watch at all is, RM, so Richard Mille. And obviously their watches are extremely expensive.
$300,000 plus, yeah.
So you're getting a carbon watch for less than $300,000. I just think it's super cool. I talked with those guys at that race team. We had just a long conversation one evening trying to design this watch, and we came up with the dial design, and we couldn't figure out kind of what case material we wanted to go with. And I had brought up titanium, which I've done titanium watches before, and I had brought up carbon. And we eventually just decided to go with the carbon. And then basically, I found a company that makes forged carbon parts, and they're making the parts for me. So yeah, I've gotten, pictures and stuff like that of the cases. The cases haven't come in yet, but we have everything else ready to assemble them as soon as those cases come in. And and we'll test the first few out and make sure everything's good on them. But the company I used has a really good QA process, so They're quality assuring it right now. So once I get it, I'll do the same, and just to verify that we're not giving anybody anything we wouldn't wear ourselves. So
yeah, well, and that's what you had mentioned, and I think that's, you know, a good thing for anyone interested in buying a tin can timepiece. Like you were saying that whenever you first make a watch, you have yourself or your buddies or whoever test these watches out and wear them in all conditions, wear them duck hunting, wear them working on the truck. And then, you know, if something breaks, before you release it to the public, you fix it and see what has broken. So you're not really using your client base, that's at least not your tight-knit client base, to, you know, test those out. And even if something were to go wrong, didn't you say there's a, you know, a 2 to 3 year warranty on there?
Yeah, so basically I tell everyone it's a 3 year warranty, which means every watch I've ever made is still under warranty. So, but yeah, so I was working on a submarine before I have this office job now. And so that's when we came out with a Quartermaster, which the Quartermaster is kind of a dressier watch. It's not something you want to wear to work. But I gave it to a mechanic on the boat. And I was like, hey, let me know it breaks. Here you go. Here's your free watch, pretty much. You know what I'm saying? Do whatever you want to with it, you know what I'm saying? Let me know what breaks. And he wore it, and he tore it up, but he about wore the plating off of it, you know. Mm-hmm. But he did it, and it was good. He had no issues with it. So he did end up breaking the crystal, but not on the submarine, so I'm not sure how he did that, but yeah. I replaced the crystal.
He probably
for
took
him.
A hammer to it and
yeah, probably. but yeah, he ended up breaking the crystal. This has been about a month ago, so he's had it for about a year. He ended up breaking that crystal, but we replaced the crystal. It wasn't no issue. But yeah, so that's the Quartermaster, which I would say is like our lowest tier on the durability chart. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's definitely, it's a pretty watch you don't want to beat up, but if you want to, go for it, you know? So
yeah, this is probably one that I think I'll wear with a nice suit jacket or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. So that one, it goes great with a good suit jacket. And then the SS1 would probably be our toughest watch. So, yeah. It's definitely our toughest watch.
And when I got that in, that SS1, and that's kind of what I wanted to, get into next, that kind of the rugged but pretty balance, because when I got that SS1 in, sure, it looks beautiful, especially, you know, you sent me the one in burlap moss with the orange accents, which is slick. And it also just seems like I could throw that thing at the wall.
Yeah,
it'd probably be just fine. So.
Yeah, so yeah, the Sellita movement in that watch is really good. It's got, you know, shock settings and stuff like that on all the jewels, so like it could take a beating. And then as far as the case goes, I mean the case is it's stainless steel. You know what I'm saying? So it's got, you know, some brushed stainless steel, and it's got some high polished areas, things like that, to really kind of give it that pop. But like the sapphire crystal, you know, the ceramic bezel, you can't beat it. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. And for the price, I mean, honestly, you know, it's something, if let's say you were to break something, you know what I'm saying? It wouldn't cost a few dollars just to fix it. And, you know, and then you got go again, you know what I'm saying? So,
right.
Yeah. So it's got a, see-through case back, which is kind of, I wanted a see-through case back, even though that see-through case back is going to lower my water resistance. So originally we were shooting for about a 200 meter water resistance, but that was with a solid case back. And then I decided a see-through case back would be much more appealing. Everyone likes a see-through case back. And so we lowered the water resistance down to 100 meters. But then again, I don't know of anyone that dives more than 100 meters. So.
Well, in that case back, I mean, seeing that movement in there, and same with this Quartermaster, I don't think you can beat that. I think, you know, most of my initial watches in my collection were quartz. And, you know, I got my first automatic earlier this year, and now having yours be automatic as well. I mean, they're just, it's very aesthetically pleasing to turn that thing around and watch that movement do some work.
Yeah. If you have a mechanical mind, just watching the movement work is, it's pretty cool. You know what I'm saying?
Now, which watch do you have on today?
Well, today I actually have on a watch that we made and never released. But it is a 36 millimeter dive watch. But if you look closely, it's quartz.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so I made it with a Swiss quartz movement. It's a 36 mil, so it's pretty small on my wrist.
Kind of look, has that Submariner look as well.
Yeah, so it's made with a mod watch case. I saw it in the big drawer today, and I was like, well, I had never worn that. I'll wear it today. So
yeah.
But it's got a quartz movement, and it uses a Swiss quartz movement in there. So, but it's just on a black NATO strap. But yeah, it's a good little watch. So,
is that, would you say that's your daily, or what's your as the owner of the company? What's your daily? If I had to go away for a week, what watch would you take with you?
If I'm going away for a week, I'm taking an SS1 all day.
Yeah,
it's the my go-to right now. So, I've been wearing them since we released them. My favorite, or the one I wear just about every day, is the green bezel with like the cream white dial. I wear that just about every day on the metal bracelet that, you know, it comes on. So I will say, though, the long lug width makes that thing really good to put a strap on it.
Yeah, you said most people put straps on your SS1s. I personally think I'm going to keep the metal bracelet for a while. I like it. I like the clasp on it and everything. I think it's pretty slick, but... You know, I have seen some of those people on your Instagram account where they actually put pretty cool straps on them. And
yeah, and like we encourage it.
Like hunting.
Yeah, we encourage it. And I'm not afraid to, you know, share it even with it's got somebody else's strap on it. You know what I'm saying? But just because the long lug width was like the original design of like, hey, I want this thing to fit a strap well. So I want it to fit a wrist, but also fit a strap well, which means you need to run with a little longer of a lug width. So that's what we did, and it ended up turning out really well. So The straps fit wonderful. You can throw a millimeter thick strap, or you could throw like a 2 millimeter thick strap, which is like considered a heavy strap, and it fits it just fine. So,
and what size are the straps? Is it 22
millimeter? They're 20 millimeter.
20? Okay.
Yeah, so they're 20 millimeter wide. And I sell a bunch too, just because when we designed the watch, I was like, yeah, I want this watch to be good for straps. And then I didn't have any straps. So, we work with a company, and I just sell some straps that they make. But I don't make any straps.
Awesome. Well, I want to move on to just a couple of topics. About we kind of touched on, you know, your Racing Carbon watch that you have behind you. But I also want to talk about, like, the CRNA and kind of healthcare line that you've done before. I think you mentioned that most of those were mods, but that was more of, like, that fundraiser giving back to the healthcare workers, right?
Yeah, so my wife is a CRNA, which is a certified registered nurse anesthetist. So she puts people to sleep. So she came up with the idea. She was working with the PAC out of Georgia, which is the political action group or whatever out of Georgia that basically goes and talks to senators and stuff like that and say, hey, you know, this law could affect our practice. Yeah, so they just kind of go and, you know, tell these senators like, hey, the thing you're voting on, make sure, you know that this is what you're actually voting for and like, hey, this is how it's going to affect our practice and things like that. Now, this is all like strictly donation packs. So it's not like these packs you hear of on the news that are giving billions of dollars to senators. You know what I'm saying? It's none of that. It's more or less, you know, trying to educate them, which, you know, if I was a senator, I would want someone to educate me. So that's kind of what it is. And she wanted to do a fundraiser for this PAC. That way they could afford to go back and forth to Atlanta to talk to these different senators and stuff like that. So we did the fundraiser for them for the first CRNA watch. We did it in two sizes and it sold really well. We sold about 170 of them now. So yeah, we sold quite a bit of them and it kept me busy for a long time. So we did that. Started last night working on one for South Carolina's PAC. And they're actually designing a blue SS1 with some like a palmetto theme to it. And it'll have, you know, CRNA on it, or it'll have, you know, not CRNA on it, or just have something about the state. So we're working on that with them. And then we did one for Nevada. So we're doing a few fundraisers back and forth, and each one of them, you know, depends on what option for fundraising they use. So most of them have used the option where basically I package and ship them and all that stuff. And they get like a flat $25 a watch. So, which is good for them because it's a no-cost fundraiser. So if they sell two watches, it's not going to cost them anything. You know what I'm saying? If they sell 150 watches.
Basically, you don't make any, whenever you do something like that, you don't make any profit, but you cover your costs and then proceeds go to the PAC organization.
Yeah, so we make a $25 donation to the PAC or whoever we're doing. We still do make a profit on the watches, and then we do that $25 donation to whichever fundraiser we're doing with. So, yeah.
So it's a win-win.
Oh, yeah. It's a no-cost fundraiser, too. So if someone wants to do a fundraiser, they're going to get with me. They're going to design a watch. We're going to come up with a proposal, and then they're going to give us the go-ahead or not. And like I said, if they sell two watches, it's not going to cost them anything to only sell two watches. You know what I'm saying? There's very few no-cost fundraisers that you don't have to do anything for. You know what I'm saying? You can do a no-cost fundraiser with, like, Krispy Kreme, I think. You know what I'm saying? But right. You still got to go deliver all these damn donuts.
Right. So it's a time investment.
Yeah, you don't have to deliver any donuts with my fundraiser. You just basically help me design a watch, and then we post it, and then when I sell a whole bunch of them, I'll send you a check.
Yeah, so this is something that if we have a listener out there that's maybe interested in doing fundraisers that has a nonprofit or something like that, then anyone can reach out.
100%, yeah. And I'll do them for a business. You know what I'm saying? If we do them for a business as well, someone wants to give, a corporate gift or something like that. We've done that before.
What's your minimum quantity?
Yeah, I don't have a minimum. I'll make one watch. I'll make one watch. I don't mind. So that's the big difference between me and like those companies I had told you that I worked with before that wanted, a big minimum order quantity of like 60 to 100. And, I wasn't sure I could sell that many. So we do a minimum order for our custom watches is basically, because we'll do each individual custom watches for fundraisers. We'll do a quantity of one if that's what they want. So,
yeah, no, that's awesome. I think I would be shocked if you could find another company that makes watches that would even do that.
Yeah, I like the design process of the watches and things like that and coming up with the designs. So it doesn't bother me to sit here and sit down with someone, design a watch, and then, maybe we sell 20, maybe we sell 150. Or maybe we just sell one. So I don't mind sitting down with someone designing a watch.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't feel like work. Before, we kind of close up here, I do want to talk a little bit about some deeper stuff about, faith, mental health, community, starting with the veteran experience. Because I had mentioned, you can hear on my podcasts that most podcasts of mine, even if they don't start talking about mental health, I like to touch on mental health at least once throughout the episode. And you mentioned specifically, you do have a pretty deep interest in mental health and, helping veterans because the suicide rate is so high in veterans. So how does that play a role in your brand and kind of like your daily life and, being an active duty Navy submariner?
Yeah, the veteran thing, 22 veterans a day is what they say, right? So the real number is it's a little higher than that nowadays. Yeah, 22 veterans a day, commit suicide. So that's the ones that are ruled as suicide, right? So there's also, different ways that people do it, right? So car wrecks and things like that won't be considered suicide. Things that may look like an accident won't be considered suicide. So the actual number is, who knows what the actual number is, but 22 veterans a day is ridiculous. You know what I'm saying? That's when I think about who I went to boot camp with, my division was 70 dudes. And it's like, that was 7-8 weeks worth of people. You know what I'm saying? So in 3 days, all those guys are gone. And that's crazy to me. These guys work in an environment, that a very structured environment, and then get out, have issues, things like that. They don't have the support that they had when they were in. You know what I'm saying? A lot of these guys come out of high school, leave their mom's basement and go, live on a submarine, right? So they have no real backing. The structure that the military gives you is great. But when you get out, you have all these issues, you want to go and you want to be free, from the military, but it's okay. Yeah. You still need a job. You still need all these things. And now you don't have that support network that you had when you were in, where it's, I've had guys that work for me on the boat that, they're like, hey, I need to buy a car. My car blew up. What do I do? You know what I'm saying? How many bosses drive them to a dealership and go, help them find a good deal in a car? You know what I'm saying? It's like, that's the kind of stuff we do. We watch out for each other and stuff like that. And, in the real world workforce, you don't have that. I think that's a lot to do with it. It's, in the military, you get these guys that you've been through hell and back with, and I'm not talking about just like combat guys or anything like that. I'm talking about, this, I operate on a submarine. We've never shot a torpedo at anything. You know what I'm saying? Not a real torpedo at anything real. You know what I'm saying? We've never been in a spot where we think we're all gonna die. We've been through some shit. You know what I'm saying? That they can't pay you enough money to do in the real world. And I think that really builds like a brotherhood, stuff like that. If these guys are, doing this, they mean it, you know what I'm saying? And then when you get out, you don't have that support network. You don't have those guys anymore. A lot of guys end up moving back home where they came from. And then, everyone they went to high school with is still in town or not doing anything or just going out and drinking all night. You know what I'm saying? So,
And I think there's a lack of appreciation across the board, especially, you know, I don't know if it used to be like this, I'm not sure, but I do see it's less common for someone to say, hey, thank you for your service, or like
yeah.
actually maybe take the time to learn a little bit about what the military does, because I think a lot of people just, you know, I'm guilty of it too at times, just enjoying my freedom, right? I'm just enjoying my freedom, and it doesn't have to be someone who was on the front lines that still has sacrificed for that freedom. And I think that's kind of what you're getting at as well with some of these issues whenever people get out.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's just the veteran number as well. There's a lot of active duty guys that end up killing themselves as well. So in fact, Kings Bay Naval Base has the highest rate of any military base in the world of suicide. So suicide's a big issue down here. They're not sure why it's, you know, this base specifically. I don't live on base, you know, I've never had to live on base here. So like, I don't know if it's living situations, but the one guy on my boat that I knew that had committed suicide, you know, he didn't live on base. So I don't think that was an issue for him, you know, but people don't realize it, but young man between the ages of 18 and 34, you know what I'm saying, are more likely to kill themselves than anyone. And as following a divorce, they're four times more likely than the next guy. Reaching out, talking to folks may make a difference. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's just something that I want to continue to talk about on these shows of mine. And I appreciate you opening up about that, because I think really, you know, men and women, but I think, you know, men need to feel more comfortable reaching out. And I think that needs to be received well too. I don't know if you've seen recently, Chris Williamson talked about how there's new studies that said a lot of the men who do end up committing suicide, they have reached out.
Yeah.
And the people who they reached out to didn't take them seriously. So All it's right. not to say it's their fault. I mean, who really knows in that situation? But I thought that was a very interesting thing, because a lot of people just say, yeah, men should reach out more. I think it's also true that if a man reaches out and is vulnerable about mental health struggles, then that needs to be received well.
I'm in the submarine community, as we've said before. So, you know, you go underwater for 3 months with a bunch of dudes, they say some pretty terrible things, right? So we all say pretty terrible things back and forth to each other. The worst things you'll ever hear would be on a submarine. So, you know, when I first got in, it was a lot of jokes, you know what I'm saying? Everyone would joke about, you know, just suicide and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? It was just a natural thing people would say a lot. And yeah, so I don't see that as much, like the joking part of it. So I guess that's better, but it could also just be because we had a suicide on our boat. So that was, I think, you know, when you take the joke out of it, it's, you actually hear someone say that they want to do that to themselves. It's, you know, you might take it more seriously.
Yeah, that's a heavy subject, but I appreciate you at least being willing to talk about it here on the show.
Oh, yeah.
If anyone that's watching this, you know, wants to maybe explore reaching out to someone, you know, feel free to message myself or Scotty directly. I mean, he's got Tin Can Timepieces. I've got the pod staff on social media. So, you know, I'm happy to share my email with anyone. I think it's also in my bio as well. So, just as another resource, if, you know, I'm not a mental health expert, but at the same time, I know people who are, and I've had some of them on this show. Awesome. Well, lastly, let's talk about just expansion plans. I know this year you said that you kind of hit some new milestones, and you created a decent amount of profit last year, and you're on track this year to have, you know, increased it significantly more. So what's your expansion plans?
Yep. So this next coming year, we have some ideas we really like the case of that SS1. So we're going to expand on the SS1 even further. So we have, which I've already released, some GMT models. We don't have them available yet, but we have released what they'll be looking like. So we'll be going with a GMT, three GMTs for now. So we could have some more in the future. In fact, I'm working on two more already that we could add to the pile up if we want to do that. And then a diving inspired SS1. So the SS1 right now is kind of a daily watch. You know, it is a dive watch, but we're coming out with one that's more diving inspired. Following the footsteps of some of the larger companies that made, you know, very diving inspired watches. So like the older Tag 200s, things like that. I'll just say it. We're working on a full loom dial watch right now. So the entire dial glows, the bezel will glow. We're gonna have it come on a like a diving rubber strap.
I've never seen a bezel glow.
Yeah, so the bezel will glow, the indices on the watch dial will still glow, and then the entire dial will glow. But the indices are gonna glow blue, the dial will glow green, and then the hands will glow blue as well, so that you could tell the difference in all of it. And then it'll come on a black rubber diving strap. So like kind of like your classic Marathon, classic Seiko dive watches come on that like classic rubber strap. So we're pretty excited about that one. We have some renders of it, but I'm not releasing anything yet. I want to get actual like 4K pictures of the thing before I show anybody anything. So
Well, I think that's enticing enough for now. At least
oh
for me, it is.
So a full loom dial, and then we're also going to come out with one more model so far of the Swiss SS1. One
Awesome.
more color combination that we're going to
Yeah.
do for it. So we're working
I
on
may or may
those.
not know what it is, but I'm not going to share it on here.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll share it once we get it. I want to get some good pictures of these things before I share them too much. So
Yeah.
yeah, so just working on expanding what we have. Already starting to design the racing inspired watch for next year. So this is 2026 is racing inspired watch, and then I'm working on designing the watch for 2027. So hopefully this partnership goes great with this racing brand, and then hopefully we do it again next year. We're gonna do something a little different than a carbon watch. So
Yeah.
we'll probably continue to do just a racing series every year, just something different.
Awesome. Well, just to close it out, if anyone listening is interested in checking out the collection, visit tincantime.com today. Enter code PODSTEF20 for a 20% off of your entire order. A lot of people have already taken advantage of it already, and I'm excited for more people to do so. So thank you so much, Scotty, and I can't wait to have you on again once you've implemented some of these expansion plans.
All right, yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
This episode is sponsored by Tin Can Timepieces. Looking for a watch that's built for anything life throws at you? Let me introduce you to Tin Can Timepieces. This is more than just a watch, it's a commitment to quality and purpose. Tin Can Timepieces is proudly based out of Georgia and is owned and operated by an active duty U.S. Navy submariner. That's right, a company built on discipline and precision. Every watch they create is handcrafted and features reliable automatic movements, ensuring you get a premium quality feel with every tick. Whether you need a rugged diver or a classic dress watch, Tin Can offers an assortment of styles for every mission. Tin Can Timepieces, hand-built for purpose, built for the depths. Dive deeper and check out their collection today at tincantime.com.